The police have arrested Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary revelation and development on this story involving the Epstein files and all the allegations that have been swirling around about Andrew over the many years, from Virginia Giuffre, now sadly deceased, and since then. And certainly what's been contained in the Epstein files as released in the last few weeks. But the police have arrived at Sandringham Estate this morning, where Andrew has made his new home. It's his 66th birthday today. What a birthday present that is. He has been arrested by the police. Of course, the brother of the current king, the second son of our late Queen Elizabeth.
This is my video update on this Thursday midday, February the 19th, coming to you from Nicosia, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And the big story for today and for the upcoming weekend is the possible war between the United States and Iran. It looks like Trump is very close to making a decision to strike Iran. And we have military exercises in the Strait of Hormuz and in the Gulf of Oman by the Iran military. These exercises started on the 16th of February. They called these military exercises Smart Control of Hormuz Strait. And on the 18th, we had military exercises begin, naval exercises begin between Iran, Russia, and I believe China will be joining these exercises very soon as well. Smart Control of Hormuz Strait. Iran is anticipating a U.S. attack, and we could be seeing the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. So the Wall Street Journal is saying that Trump has been advised by his military as to what strike options he has available. And the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Trump administration might be going for a big decapitation strike to try and collapse the Iran government and get a regime change. We're talking about a weeks-long, maybe even more than a week, weeks-long military operation, which will target all of the Iran leadership, take all of the Iran leadership out, and this will lead to a collapse in the government and to a collapse of Iran. A full-on regime change from a massive weeks-long decapitation U.S. military strike. The Wall Street Journal's article is U.S. gathers the most air power in the Mideast since the 2003 Iraq invasion. U.S. is ready to strike Iran, but President Trump hasn't yet decided to do so. According to the Wall Street Journal, Trump received several briefings on strike options, including a potentially weeks-long air campaign to kill scores of Iranian political and military leaders, with the end goal of toppling the government. Other options reportedly focus on nuclear and missile sites. All about regime change. Everything else was BS over the past 6 months. Everything else was just BS. Uranium enrichment, ballistic missiles. Gotta protect the protesters. It has been about regime change, and it is about regime change. And a weeks-long military operation, maybe even more than a weeks-long military operation, an air campaign. Trump is trying to avoid boots on the ground, but there are reports circulating that he may even be prepared to commit boots on the ground if this thing drags on. But he is going for the decapitation strikes, the regime change, which is Trump's MO. That is what Trump likes to do. He likes to go after the leadership. He likes to take out leadership, negotiators, kidnap presidents. This is the Trump military's MO. So Trump also posted on Truth Social that the U.S. may need the bases in Diego Garcia and the U.K., the islands that the U.K. controls, and warns that an attack from Iran could also target the U.K. That is what he posted on Truth Social. Trump says, if Iran doesn't make a deal, the U.S. may need to use its military bases located on Diego Garcia and the U.K., and warns that an attack from Iran would potentially be made on the U.K. as well as other friendly countries. So the U.K.'s going to be involved in this. One way or another, the U.K. will be involved in this operation. It was a pretty long post on Truth Social, but basically that was the message from Trump. Diego Garcia, we're going to use Diego Garcia, the military bases there. We're going to use military bases that the U.K. has available in that area. And as U.S. president, I'm telling you, U.K., 00A Keir Starmer, that Iran may go after you. So we're going to need your military assets, and you should be prepared to join us in this conflict. That was pretty much the message from Trump. Trump is also withdrawing U.S. forces from Syria, which is a sign that something's going to go down. Some people say this strike is going to happen tomorrow. Other analysts say it's going to happen next weekend. It could go down tomorrow, Friday. It could go down Saturday. It's going to happen on a weekend. All these operations always happen on a weekend. So it's either this weekend or next weekend. We have the State of the Union address, which is going to happen on Tuesday. So I'm just trying to figure out, what do you guys think is going to happen? Will Trump start this weeks-long strike into Iran, the decapitation strike into Iran this weekend, and then give the State of the Union on Tuesday? Or will he first give the State of the Union and then possibly go for the strike after the State of the Union on Tuesday? In other words, the next weekend. What do you guys think is going to be the strategy? My understanding is that all of the military assets are pretty much in place for a strike, either this weekend or next weekend. And this comes at a time when you have the Democrats now openly saying that that Trump is implicated in the Epstein files. Actually, Ted Lieu, not a fan of Ted Lieu. I am not a fan of that guy. I did not like the way Ted Lieu acted during the whole Russiagate scam, which is what it was. Ted Lieu is not a good guy, in my opinion, but he put out a statement yesterday saying that Trump is in the Epstein files thousands and thousands of times. He said, highly disturbing allegations against Trump. That is what Ted Lieu said yesterday in a press conference. Even more pressure for the Trump administration to begin a conflict with Iran. The Democrat leadership is now putting pressure on the Trump administration with the Epstein files. Trump himself with the Epstein files. So the world waits to see what's going to happen, either this weekend or next weekend. There's still some hope that there could be a diplomatic solution that's reached, but I highly doubt it. I think everyone highly doubts it, that there's going to be a diplomatic solution. So we have a situation developing between Hungary, Slovakia, and Ukraine. And this has to do with the blocking of oil from the Druzhba pipeline. Russian oil that flows through the Druzhba from Ukraine to Hungary and Slovakia. And Zelensky claims that the oil cannot be delivered via the pipeline because Russia damaged the pipeline. But everyone knows that's BS. Everyone knows that's BS. Peter Szijjártó, the foreign minister of Hungary, said that's BS. The pipeline is fine and operational. Fico, Slovakia, says it's BS. It's operational, but that's the excuse that Ukraine is running with. The reason Ukraine is not delivering the oil to Hungary and Slovakia is because they're trying to put pressure on Hungary and Slovakia. They don't like the way Hungary and Slovakia are vetoing money to Ukraine and vetoing Ukraine's entry into the European Union, the fast track into the European Union. I'm sure they're also trying to put pressure on Hungary, economic pressure on Hungary, now that we're getting close to the elections in April. And Ukraine would never do this. They would not stop the oil going to Hungary or Slovakia if they did not have some sort of approval from the European Union and or the United States. They would not do this on their own. Zelensky would not do this without the permission of his puppet masters. But it looks like Hungary and Slovakia are finally going to retaliate. They are telling Ukraine either open up the Druzhba and get the oil to us, or we are going to be stopping diesel fuel to Ukraine. Actually, they have decided to stop delivery of diesel fuel to Ukraine until Kiev opens up the Druzhba pipeline. That is what Peter Szijjártó and Viktor Orbán announced. And Fico is saying the same thing. Fico is saying the exact same thing, actually. Fico is also saying that if energy is not delivered to Slovakia, then Slovakia is going to stop supplying electricity to the Green Goblin. And Slovakia provides a lot of electricity to Ukraine, around 18 to 22% of Ukraine's electricity, from my understanding, is supplied by Slovakia at a time when Ukraine cannot afford to not have electricity, to not have energy. Slovakia is really going to turn the screws on the Green Goblin with this move. So the EU is now pretending to be consulting with Ukraine and to be pressing Ukraine as to why the oil is not flowing through the Druzhba. That is what the EU has said in a statement. They are now asking Ukraine, what is going on with the Druzhba? Has it been repaired? That is what the EU is saying. Have you been able to repair the Druzhba pipeline? Are you repairing the Druzhba pipeline? And when will the repairs be completed? This is the theater that is now coming from the European Union. So they're trying to get answers from Ukraine. When are you going to repair the Druzhba pipeline? We need an answer. We need to know when everything will be back up and running. So that's the situation between those countries. Orbán said the Ukrainians' decision to block oil deliveries through the Friendship pipeline to Hungary is blatant political blackmail. Yes, it is. They're trying to pressure us to support their EU membership. Yes, they are. And hand over funds belonging to Hungarian families. In response, Hungary has decided to stop diesel fuel deliveries to Ukraine. Thankfully, Hungary has a government that doesn't bow to blackmail. We have taken all necessary steps to secure our supply, and we will not give in. What they have done in the meantime, as they try to figure this out, as the EU tries to get answers from Zelensky about the Druzhba pipeline, what Hungary and Slovakia have done is they have requested from Croatia that Russian oil be delivered to them via the Adria pipeline, Russian maritime oil. There's a carve-out. There's an exception in all of the EU's sanctions against Russian oil. And there's an exception in there for Hungary and Slovakia that they're allowed Russian oil via the pipeline, of course, but they're also allowed maritime Russian oil to be delivered to them if certain things like this happen. If Ukraine decides to stop Russian oil via the pipeline, or Russian oil cannot be delivered via a pipeline, then they have the exemption to get Russian oil via sea. So they're going to be getting oil in the meantime through the Adria pipeline. That's going to take 30 days, though, to actually arrive to Hungary. But that's the situation with that. And Politico is reporting that Ukraine is not going to get an invite to the next NATO meeting, which is going to take place in June, I believe, in Ankara, Turkey, I want to say. But we're seeing, according to Politico, a NATO 3.0 led by Eldridge Colby. And they're calling it a NATO 3.0, a NATO factory reset, reboot, reset of NATO. And in this reset, the U.S. is looking to cut down on its NATO spending. That's what this is all about. It's all about money. The NATO business for the United States is bleeding cash. It's not worth the money being put into NATO. Of course, Trump is pushing the Europeans to up their NATO spending to 5% of GDP, which is going to demolish many European economies, many NATO member state economies. But the U.S. is looking to cut down on expenses and money being poured into the grift that is NATO, and they're going to wind down NATO's operations in Iraq. That's one of the things that they're going to do. They're also going to scale down NATO's operations with regards to Kosovo. They should just be done with all of NATO and Kosovo as well. Get out of Kosovo, NATO. Time to leave. Skedaddle, be gone from Kosovo. They are going to be gone from Iraq, or scale down in these areas. And they are saying that they do not want to expand NATO any further. No more invites to Ukraine, and also no more invites to NATO meetings for Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and South Korea. U.S. presses NATO for major reset, ending mission in Iraq. The push by Washington, which also wants to scale down peacekeeping operations in Kosovo, has become known internally as a return to factory settings, four diplomats told Politico. The U.S. is also pressing allies not to invite Ukraine and the alliance's four official Indo-Pacific partners, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and South Korea, to the formal meetings at NATO's July summit in Ankara, the four diplomats said. July summit in Ankara, not June. So Kaya Kallas, stunning and brave. Can't get away from Kaya Kallas. She pulls me back in every time. Anyway, she has the concessions ready for Russia. The concessions demanded of Russia. I talked about this last week, that Kaya Kallas was going to present a list of concessions that EU member states are going to have to agree to, and that will then be presented to Russia in order to get to some sort of an agreement on the conflict in Ukraine. The loser's demands of the winner. The loser's demands of the winner. This is what Kaya Kallas has come up with. She's done with the list. She's finished it. All that's left now is for EU member states to look it over. I imagine to approve it. And then they're going to take this document and they're going to present it to Putin, to Lavrov, to Peskov. And I imagine that the Russians are going to get a good laugh out of this. I imagine they're going to get a really freaking good laugh out of this. So what is what is in this list? What are the concessions? A response to maximalist demands the EU has determined the concessions Russia must make regarding Ukraine. Kaya Kallas distributed a document to EU member states outlining the concessions Russia must make in its negotiations with Ukraine. The demands include a reduction in the number of Russian troops and their withdrawal from neighboring countries, the payment of reparations, and the need for democratization of society. If I was Lavrov and I saw this document, I would say, okay, democratization of society. You go first, EU. You go first, European Union. First, you guys democratize, then we'll democratize the unelected bureaucrats and technocrats of Brussels meddling in Romanian elections. Yeah, they're lecturing Russia about democratization. Okay. Okay, EU. Anyway, that's the list, everybody. Scale down your military. Pay us money. Give us money. Remove troops from neighboring countries, whatever that means. Ukraine. Oh, I don't know what other countries they could be talking about, but anyway. And democratization of society. That's the list of demands the EU is making to Russia. So Boris Johnson, he's back. Of course, Boris Johnson has to weigh into all of this madness. The saboteur of the peace agreement in 2022, Boris Johnson, he wrote an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, put a sock in it, Europe. Boris Johnson is very upset with Europe. He claims in this article that the Europeans are complaining about Trump. They're whining about Trump and his position with Ukraine and his pulling back from the transatlantic alliance, or apparently he's scaling back from the transatlantic partnership and the NATO allies and all of this nonsense. And Boris Johnson is saying this is the time for Europe to step up. This is Europe's opportunity. So stop whining and start giving Zelensky money and weapons. That's the message from Boris Johnson. Oh my God, Boris Johnson. He refuses to go away. He will not go away. He just takes orders given to him from his masters. That's it. You are going to write an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal calling for Europe to continue to escalate and to keep the conflict in Ukraine going. All right, Boris? Yes, sir. I will get that article written up. So Zelensky was on Piers Morgan. I think Piers Morgan and Boris Johnson are the only two people in the world who still actually genuinely believe that Zelensky is Churchill. I think those are the only two people in the entire planet. Maybe Kaya Kallas. Those three. I don't even think Ursula believes that Zelensky is Churchill anymore. So I would say those are the three people on planet Earth that still actually believe that Zelensky is some heroic Churchill figure. So, of course, establishment media figure, Piers Morgan, who has the YouTube show Uncensored, tries to make it appear as if he's some independent media outlet, independent media journalist, when he's always been establishment media. Anyway, in my opinion. Anyway, he had the Green Goblin on. Of course he had the Green Goblin on, because everything is falling apart for Le Goblin Vert. And Le Goblin Vert needed some friendly media to speak with. And so who else than Piers Morgan to appear on Piers Morgan's show? And I'm not going to go through the interview. It's pretty tough to watch Piers Morgan without Le Goblin Vert. To watch Piers Morgan with Le Goblin Vert, well, that's just torture, isn't it? What I will say is that Le Goblin Vert, he has discovered the word shit. He really likes the word shit. He said it the other day in an interview with Axios. I don't want to hear about Medinsky, negotiator for Russia. I don't want to hear his history shit. And he said it yesterday with Piers Morgan. He got the script. He's reading his script, and his script is saying to to talk about shit, the shit of the historical shit from the lectures of Putin or Medinsky. That's what the scriptwriters have ordered Alensky to say. And so that's what he's doing now. He's appearing on shows and talking about history and how he doesn't care about history and shit. That's what he told Piers Morgan. Let me read you his quote. He said during an interview with Piers Morgan, Mr. Piers Morgan, with respect to history, this is a direct quote, by the way, with respect to history, I don't want to lose time on these issues. It's not even interesting for me why he began this war. I don't want to speak about it because I don't have the time. I don't need to waste time on historic issues, reasons why he began war and all the bullshit he is raising with the Americans, etc., to end this war and to find a diplomatic way. I don't need all this historical shit, really. Oh, what a clown show. What a clown show, man. I'm so tired of this shit. I'm so tired of this shit. I really am tired of this shit. So that's Alensky. That's Alensky. Podolyak, what does this word sheet, what does this word mean? Mr. President, how do I explain this word to you? Let me show you this emoji, Mr. President, and I think you'll get it. You see this emoji? Oh, yes, I know this emoji. This is what sheet is. I like this word, Podolyak. I will use this word. I will use this word. I have no time for this history sheet. Yeah. That's Alensky, everybody, on Piers Morgan. Piers Morgan, Putin. Putin, Piers asked Alensky about Putin trying to kill him. Yeah, right. As if Putin wants to take the most incompetent leader in all of history out. I mean, why would you want to take out Alensky? The guy is beyond incompetent. You want to keep him in there, right? But anyway. Piers Morgan is now trying to push the narrative that the Russians are trying to take out Alensky, right? I need guns, not a car, not a plane. What did Alensky claim to say in 2022? I need guns. I need bullets, not a plane, not a car. But Piers Morgan asks, Putin is trying to kill you. What do you think about that, Mr. President? Piers Morgan can't say Putin. He says Putin. Putin. And he does this like swallowing when he says Putin. Putin. Oh, man. It was the Dumb and Dumber show on Uncensored. Anyway, during the negotiations, let's get serious again. During the negotiations yesterday in Geneva, I talked about how there was this two-hour meeting behind closed doors. Actually, there was a little over an hour meeting with everybody. Then the Russian team was about to leave, but for some weird reason, Medinsky went back to the hotel and he had a closed-door meeting. My understanding is that the U.S. was not in the room. It was between Ukraine and Russia. And the Ukrainian media is saying that behind the closed doors, it was Medinsky, the Russian chief negotiator, with Umerov, the Ukraine chief negotiator, and Arakhamia, who is the leader of Alensky's Servant for the People party, and he's also one of the negotiators. So those were the three people in the room behind these closed doors. So we had Tucker Carlson going to Israel to interview the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee is a big-time supporter of Netanyahu. And they got into it over on X about a week ago. They got into this back and forth on X. And then Mike Huckabee suggested to Tucker Carlson, why don't you come and interview me and I'll tell you what's really going on or something like that. And Tucker Carlson said, done. And so Tucker went to Israel and he conducted this interview with the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Huckabee. And Huckabee used to be the governor of Arkansas, wasn't he? I think it was Arkansas. He was either the governor or senator of Arkansas. And his daughter was in the first Trump administration. She had the position that that Carolyn Leavitt has today, the press secretary or something like that. Anyway, Sarah Huckabee. Anyway, Tucker completed his interview, and the reports are that as he was at the airport, I guess on his way out, Tucker and his entire team were detained in Israel, according to the Daily Mail. Detained, and the journalist was dragged into an interrogation room as explosive interview sparks diplomatic firestorm. According to the Daily Mail, Israel did not want this interview conducted by Tucker Carlson for some reason. And then the U.S. government got involved, the Trump administration got involved, and they managed to allow Tucker, to convince Israel to allow Tucker to conduct the interview with Huckabee. But then on his way out, I guess, Tucker was detained and his producer and his crew were detained and they were interrogated. And then Tucker posted on social media that he was allowed to finally leave and he was on his way back to America. It'll be interesting to hear more from Tucker as to what exactly happened and what exactly they questioned Tucker about. So a very creepy incident, a very weird incident happened at the White House yesterday. Trump was talking about 9/11 with Lutnick standing next to him. And I think this was all connected to, I don't know if was this connected to a question about Epstein or not. I'm not sure, but I don't know how this all started, but Trump started to talk about 9/11 and he started to talk about how Lutnick managed to not be in the World Trade Center because he had to take his children to school. His wife told him to take his children to school, and he was not at the World Trade Center when everything happened, and how lucky Lutnick was. Normally he would have been in the building, but his wife insisted he take the child to school. He lost 100% of the people. His whole company was there. Cantor Fitzgerald, his whole company, like 700 people. They all died in the collapse in 9/11 of the World Trade Center. And it was a very weird exchange. I still haven't been able to figure out exactly what was going on there, why this was brought up, and what exactly was the reason behind this statement from Trump. But a very strange, uncomfortable laugh or chuckle from Lutnick as Trump was saying that he was very lucky to be here today. Anyway, I thought I would bring that up because it was a very bizarre statement from President Trump. So let's do a clown world, I guess, and we can wrap up today's video. And we'll begin with the announcement that the U.S. State Department is going to be building an online portal called freedom.gov. Which is going to let people in Europe and beyond access content banned by local governments. So any governments that are censoring outside of the United States, that are censoring content, censoring social media, people from around the world will be able to access freedom.gov, and they'll be able to see what their local governments are censoring. A lot of people are saying this is amazing. Freedom of speech. This is how the U.S. does freedom of speech. True. I can understand that. I can see that. But do you really want to get access to content through a U.S. government portal? Or it's going to be a VPN. I've read some analysis which says it's going to be a U.S. Built VPN. Or something along those lines, which will allow you access to websites or content that your government is blocking. Do you really want to do all of this through US built technology, really? I don't think I would be using the freedom.gov given the surveillance that comes from the US State Department. I don't think it's a good idea to access the internet through US government software. Just saying. Anyway, that's the one clown world. And BlackRock Mertz, in a speech he gave yesterday, he started talking about people using their real names on the internet. He said that politicians have to use their real names on the internet and on social media. Why should citizens be allowed to stay anonymous? Why should they be allowed to not use their real names when accessing the internet? That was BlackRock Mertz's argument. We have to use our real names. Why do other Germans are not required to use their real names? That's not fair, according to BlackRock Mertz. Okay, I see your point, BlackRock Mertz. You know, you can also be anonymous if you want to. You can be anonymous. You can use the handle BlackRock Mertz. I'll give you that handle. If you want to go on to X and go with the handle BlackRock Mertz, you can take it. You can take it. I'm not going to charge you anything for it. But the one advantage that that the politicians have is that you guys have the entire weight of the government behind you. You have immunity. you have the intel agencies. You have all of the state resources behind you. You can go after accounts that mock you or make fun of you, which Germany has done. They've gone after accounts that they claim make fun of politicians, of German politicians. So, I mean, you know, you have all the benefits of the internet without any downside. So go ahead and use your real name. As politicians, you can use your real names because you really have no risk of anything happening to you. But everyday people, if they want to speak freely, sometimes they have to do it anonymously, because who knows, if they say something that the German state does not like, that could land them in all kinds of trouble, and they don't have the immunity of the political elite, as we see in the Epstein files, right? The above the law political elite. Anyway, that is Mertz, and I think I'll wrap up the video there on this Thursday. I forgot to say like, share, subscribe. So I'll say it now. Like, share, subscribe. And we'll see how this video does. My channel is getting absolutely hammered by the overlords at YouTube. Oh, well, what can you do? TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. We have free shipping going on for orders over, I believe, $70 $70 or $75. You get free shipping. So definitely check that out. And I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.